Eight, nine, ten. Okay, let me get this going. Number one,
there's a quote by Clarence Coleman a little while back, and he said, no matter what Allen and Marcel did, they still saw it from the white viewpoint. It was important to get a black mayor. I was curious about why. What was different about your leadership as opposed to Marcel and Allen in regard to the black community in the city?
Well, proof is in the pudding, and it's a question of whether people were talking a good game or delivering on one. And I'm not going to include Allen in that. Allen was of a different era, and what he did was in the context of that era, and he did very important things. His political and moral leadership on the race question was an important breakthrough for Atlanta. It was an appeal to the pragmatism of the business community because he knew that that's how they were going to respond. He knew it because he was of them, and to the man of Bowen as they were, so to speak. At that time, it was a tighter power structure group. Mills B. Lane was the guy who made a turn, and Woodruff made Mills B. Lane turn. So there was no mystery about how things happened. On the other hand, Marcel should have been a lot more aggressive than he was. But my point is that even he didn't, because there is a perspective that is the result of one's life experiences. It does not mean that whites cannot lead a heavily black city successfully. Some whites can. And it does not mean that blacks cannot lead a heavily white city successfully. Some blacks can. So generalizing, but admitting of many exceptions, okay? We are the product of our environments and of our total experiences. If we have been trained to think a certain way, and if in fact the black community is not on the daily agenda of our thinking. It is not that Marcel woke up in the morning and said, what can I do now to hurt the black community? I'm sure he never, I can't believe he ever felt that or sensed that. The issue is whether he woke up saying, what can I do for the people of this city, including the black community, who are the most in need? Now the proof is in the pudding. Black participation in contracts when I became mayor, even after 4 years of Marcel's leadership as mayor, were only about 1%. There was only one black department head in all city government, in a city that was half black. We had a $600 million investment float being managed at the time by Raymond, later by Raymond McClendon, at the time by somebody else in the finance department under Charlie Davis, handled largely by the Atlanta banks.
White bank.
They were then. They still are, of course, but at that time, when you said white banks, that meant Lily White. Of all the downtown banks and their vice presidents, at that time, that is when I became mayor, and when I began this discussion with the banks, there was not a single black VP, and a VP in a bank is not a real high position. It's clearly middle to lower middle management. Okay. And how many were there downtown? Let's estimate 100 to 125 vice presidents among all the downtown banks. Okay? Six banks. I think at least that number would be the case. Not one was black. Not a single board of directors of any downtown banks was integrated. Not one. So I would think that what Clarence Coleman said in the context of my answer had some real validity to it. Now the interesting addendum to this answer is that Sam Marcel was an historic figure in Atlanta politics, not just because he was the first Jewish mayor, and the white the so-called Gentile community's reaction to that. For example, the Piedmont Driving Club automatically dropped what had been automatic membership for all Atlanta mayors when Sam Marcel got elected. That was stopped. And when I became mayor, they buried the envelope, probably. But Sam was the first mayor elected in Atlanta's history with a minority of the white vote. And a majority, and where the majority of the total vote that he got was black.
Well, he was beholden to the black community.
No question.
Yeah. He knew that, I'm sure.
He knew that, too. He only got 16% of the white vote. Mayor Allen, on some bad advice that he got, in my opinion, came out at the last minute, the 11th hour in the campaign, pushing hard for Rodney Cook, who was the Power Structure's candidate. Mm-hmm. The last time the Power Structure won an election in Atlanta, including a referendum, was 1965. The issue of their importance, and they are critically important to this city, and they are, in my opinion, comparatively speaking, the most civically responsive and committed power structure in this country among major cities. The most overwhelming percentage of them live in the city. Mm-hmm. They give of their time and so forth. They've made more than their share of mistakes like we all have. But they have won the election since 1965. Their importance is in governance and service to the people of Atlanta. Okay. Because you need all factors pulling in the same direction.
So they have to compromise at certain points if they want to achieve any sort of power.
Certainly. It's going to be some trade-offs.
What was the level of compromise with you? Because they seem to have given you a lot of problems when you first came into office.
I don't know if we have enough time to get into that this morning. No, I'll try to give you a quick answer. The level of compromise was minimum. Mm-hmm. There was more feeling on their part that I was forcing them to change. That was the result, I think, more of perception and style, my style. That was admittedly pushy after 18 months of negotiations that failed. I want to emphasize that point.
Negotiations regarding what? The airport?
We're talking about the banks at this point.
Okay.
Integrating the economy in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. The banks were going to be the leaders in this move. We're talking not only about the city contracts which we control, but also those who did business with the city and who did business in the private sector. Because we wanted to see a policy, a moral tone set that would carry over into the private sector as well, in affirmative action and equal opportunity,
right?
A lot of which we see today.
This is the basis of your...
Not as much as we'd like to see, but more than in most cities.
Yes, that's true. This is the basis of your pulling city monies out of some of these banks, I imagine.
That's correct. I only had due to one, though.
Which one?
I don't really want to say. Well, but let's put it this way, that there was a bank that did, after 18 months of getting over it, and you've got to trust me, this is an aggressively pursued period of negotiations.
Mm-hmm.
I went to their offices, I went to my office, singly and as a group. The group meeting was a mistake. I forgot that they're competitors also. And not monolithic, and they're not going to sit up and talk about their affirmative action programs in front of each other. Mm-hmm. So zero was accomplished in that meeting. But I met with them individually, had them in my office at breakfast, all that kind of stuff. Not once, but a couple of times, went to their offices by and large, and I mean, there was not a single breakthrough, not a single person hired. And the reactions were quite disappointing. The reactions that I got from many of the leaders were quite disappointing.
So in terms of Atlanta being a city that works things out by compromises, it's not working at all.
Well, you know, when you get down to the nitty-gritty, integrating the economy, this was brand new for everybody. It hadn't been done before. We had to kind of find our way. They had to find their way. I'm not, in retrospect, I was disappointed I was particularly disappointed that at the time when I needed my white friends more than ever before, they cut and ran. Now, I've never said that publicly before. I know that they feel that I didn't treat them right because I was pushy in their eyes. The perception is, does not allow for the fact that 18 months were spent trying to negotiate.
And by white friends, you mean white businessmen who had worked with you before?
That's correct. Now, that was not you, that was not totally true. Paul Austin at Coca-Cola remained a friend and confidant. And one or two other people who were not really in the power structure, but who were professional people, lawyers and so forth. And I would rather the power structure members would have come to me and say, you know, Maynard, goddammit, you know, you're the most hard-headed, arrogant SOB we've ever seen. We don't agree with this, we don't agree with that, we don't agree with this, you know, so forth and so on, rather than simply write it off and turn around. Now, the bottom line on that, however, is that that's passed.
Well, they did turn around after 18 months then.
Oh, yes. We had to move a $500,000 account out of a bank that would not comply.
And that was what?
With the city policy. To a bank that had come in on the 29th day of a 30-day last...
Ultimatum.
Yes, it was an ultimatum, in effect. It was gently put. But First Georgia Bank came in and said, we want to move, but it's going to take us 6 months because we've identified the person we want on their inside. We don't want to pull from the outside. I said, fine. They were surprised. Carl Sanders called me. Said, who do you want to go on the board? I said, no, I'm not going to point fingers. I don't want people to think that I'm trying to get my buddies jobs. This program is not about that. So I don't want to compromise the principle of affirmative action, joint venturing, and integrating the economy of Atlanta by running the risk that people say, well, he really wanted to get so-and-so on the board. So he said, well, what, you know, we'd like to have your opinion. If we come back with three names, would you give us a reaction? I said, yes. And that's how Tom Cordy went on the board of First Georgia Bank. He was on no boards at that time. And we moved a $500,000 account, just a small one, but they got the message.
Was anything moved to Citizens Trust at all?
Well, they took the maximum that under the Federal Reserve Bank they could have.
And they had not gotten any city money before, right?
No, they had some, I think, of a minimum amount. Now, the problem with Citizens Trust Bank is they could not exceed their reserve requirements under the Federal Reserve Bank, so they had the max they could handle from the city under my administration.
All of this, I guess, is part of the perception that you are, beginning of the first administration, was anti-white, which I've read in newspapers.
Yeah, which, two comments about. Number one, that was not true. I'm an integrationist philosophically.
I don't think it was true either.
No, but I mean philosophically was trained that way. And I had a family that believed in it and worked for it. Integration is not the usual. If it were, you wouldn't have to pursue it. It would just be there, right?
Right.
Okay. So my parents and grandparents have worked at it for years. In terms of personal relationships and the broad societal compact, mm-hmm. politics, economics, the whole thing, it's been a way of life in our family. I feel the same way. The problem is that some people in positions of power, some people I emphasize, kind of felt that when they thought a certain way, that's the way the, quote, the white community, close quote, thought. Now, the neighborhood movement in the city was a powerful movement.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They did not see me as anti-white.
So you're saying this really...
It was issue-oriented.
Yeah.
And it's a question of whose ox got gored.
Right. This is a response of the business community, you know, as we think.
Well, of many of its members, not even all. Yeah. All right. I would tell you this, by the way, that I never proceeded with animosity. It was always a question of trying to put public policy into place and trying to put it behind us without letting this thing just drip drab, little bits here, little bits there of improvement over the next 10, 12, 14 years, We wanted to get it done and put it behind us.
Yeah.
We did that. Now there are speeches being made by members of the Chamber of Commerce bragging on Atlanta's affirmative action progress.
Of being a model for the country.
Precisely. Yeah. And I'm very proud of it. I'm also proud of the fact that some people broke the wheel with the issue of NSA 45. We were not going to have that expressway built through the neighborhood to this city. Mm-hmm. We weren't going to tolerate it. Expand the highways in their corridor as much as they could stand. That's what you see going on now. Which Milton told me for 6 years they could not do.
Right.
Which before I left office, I finally agreed to do. But to run it through the neighborhoods unnecessarily weren't going to happen. Morningside, Virginia Highland, Midtown. There were hundreds of boarded up houses. Now I ask you a question. In those neighborhoods with hundreds of boarded up houses, would they have built an IBM building, AT&T, Campanile, Midtown Plaza 1, Midtown Plaza 2, and all the other stuff, 999 Petrie? The answer emphatically is what? No.
Okay.
The ultimate tool of economic development in Atlanta is strong, vibrant neighborhoods.
Right, absolutely.
Okay. Now, that issue we spoke on, they couldn't see the vision. And I didn't have any magic crystal ball myself. I just knew what I believed in, and it made sense. It was logical. And sure enough, we have been vindicated by ultimate actions.
Let me say something else.
Excuse me, one other thing. Even those who today still will not go, you know, still remember with some reluctance that period of pretty stormy relations as we got used to each other. That was the first term. Second term was a lot better. But even in my second term, my white vote increased when I ran for re-election. Okay. From 25% to 31%. But now when I make my rounds and talk to members of power structure, and as I see them at board meetings of the Atlanta Action Forum, board of directors meeting of Central Atlanta Progress, Georgia Business Council, and so forth, 100% they agree that issue is behind us now. And in terms of a policy initiative, implementation still remains a challenge in some regard.
Well, I think they appreciate a little more of what you did. Right?
Well, I think they do, and some have even said that. They've even actually had some people who were strong opponents who said to me, "Man, you know, I know we had our differences then, but I look back now and I have a better appreciation for what you were doing."
Yeah.
And that makes me feel very good.
I imagine so, yeah.
In terms of race as an important factor affecting decision making, was this a big part of your administration, mainly in terms of regressing early periods of neglect of the black community?
Well, the racial factor, and this, by the way, is not peculiar to me. Ivan Allen made the statement in his book, as I recall, or made the statement publicly, that you can verify it's Ivan Allen Jr., that there was not a single major decision in his 8 years as mayor that did not have racial implications.
Yes. Would you say the same thing then? Can you say something?
No, and I think that's progress. Mm-hmm. I think I can say that there were many major decisions that we made that did not have racial. For example, this I-45 issue was not really a black issue.
Mm-hmm.
It was a neighborhood preservation issue. Incidentally, 90% of the labor movement at that time was white.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there were many other decisions. For example, I think we did more for certain low-income sections of Atlanta than ever had been done to white sections, than ever had been done before. But it was not, hey, we're going to go over to help the poor whites. It was, we have policies to improve the way of life for low-income people, period.
Mm-hmm.
Those people are black and those people are white. And very pleased about that, but there were many decisions. And I don't think about a day went by where there was not some kind of decision made that did not have racial implications. But we made over 100 decisions a day. Now, race was still a major thing. It still is a major thing in Atlanta politics. And in American politics, Chicago, New York, you name it, it doesn't matter where. California, it doesn't matter where. Race is still a major factor in American life. However, let me just say what I had to come to grips with. But being the first, underline the word first, black mayor, was about the toughest job you could undertake. Because you had to deal with these two phenomena. Number one, exaggerated white anxiety. And number two, exaggerated black expectations.
I guess the white community was particularly afraid of what you would do in terms of rocking the boat.
Well, some whites were.
Yeah.
Many whites were. But I want to emphasize the white community was not reacting to me monolithically.
Yeah. I understand that. So
right.
There was a quote I got.
This neighborhood movement is heavily influenced by people of all backgrounds, male and female, many of whom are professionals and so forth, all of whom have made a dramatic difference in Atlanta.
Oh, no doubt about it. I mean, but in terms of decisions like joint venture, police brutality issue, housing and urban renewal, I mean, those things were more geared to the black community, certainly.
Yeah. I'll tell you this, I grew up in Atlanta where police brutality was the number one issue.
Yeah.
Not sometimes, every week. Every week on the front page of the Atlanta Daily World was something about them, and ultimately the Inquirer and then the Voice, Atlanta Voice and Atlanta Inquirer. Something about police brutality in the black community. It was the issue.
Even after blacks were put on the police force.
Even after blacks were on the police force. Because you recall that that was not a fair installation of blacks.
No, I spoke to some of the original black prisoners.
Okay, so you know they were made to change the uniform to Butler Street YMCA,
right.
And at first you could not arrest whites.
Right.
A white bank robber doing it right in front of them couldn't be arrested by a black cop.
Which is certainly demeaning to a black policeman.
And it was also dumb business. That's the point of dumb management. I want to keep us coming back to that point.
Mm-hmm.
Integration is bad. I mean, segregation is bad business.
Now, do you think the white business community...
Racism, ultimately, yes.
They realized that faster than the people in Birmingham, certainly.
Well, and that was the, not only the Atlanta airport, which is a big piece of this thing,
yeah.
But Atlanta, Birmingham in 1945 were pretty much an equipoise.
Yeah.
You take one city that goes to the bargaining table to settle its racial differences, at least ostensibly, that's Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And the other puts cattle prods, dogs, and fire hoses in the street. Atlanta moved beyond Birmingham at great speed, and the reason is that business does not want to be where there's potential for violence and upheaval and so forth. That was what Hartsfield meant by the saying that Atlanta is a city too busy to hate. It was his pragmatic appeal to the business community to understand that violence in integrating the schools was bad for business. And the result was they got behind it. Some didn't like it. Some didn't change their opinions. Some did change their opinions. But what happened was we integrated the schools with no violence.
But nonetheless, it was a very perfunctory type of integration that was going on.
But I'll take some over none any day. And what we're talking about is legislating behavior and seeing attitudes evolve. It doesn't happen any other way. So the result today is that Illinois and Michigan, New York and New Jersey are the least integrated states in public education, and Mississippi, Alabama, and Georgia are the most integrated states in integration.
Well, nonetheless, Atlanta has
in public schools.
One of the 10 most segregated school systems in the country.
Okay. Well, that's a practical matter. Not enough white. You know, this I'm saying there's a tongue in cheek.
Yeah.
Okay, not enough whites to go around. We're 92%.
Mm-hmm.
Now what does that say? Well, it does say there's been a tremendous disinvestment by many whites and by a substantial number of middle and upper income blacks in the Atlanta public school system.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, our schools are better than they used to be. And I'll tell you this, if all of a sudden the Atlanta school system becomes one of the top 2, 3, 4 school systems in the nation in excellence of education, there'll be a massive return of people who don't want to pay taxes for public schools and pay money to private schools also. Mark my word. Yeah. But short of that, we're going to have a practical problem that we have today. 92% of all the public school students are black.
On the other front,
all right.
You mentioned in 1970.
Could I suggest that we break at this point? I've got my partners waiting.
Oh, okay.
And can we get back together?
Yeah, I'd love to.
Can you? Sure.